Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This episode may contain content of a graphic nature, including descriptions of physical and sexual violence against adults, children, and animals. Listener discretion is advised. Hi, everyone. I'm Talia.
And I'm Tanya.
And together we are Crimes and Consequences, a true crime podcast. Hi, Tanya.
Hi, Talia.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope everybody had a great week. Anyway, I have an exciting story to share with you guys. Are you ready?
Always.
We got any business to take care of?
I don't think so.
No. Let's do it. So this story starts out on May 28th of 2007. At approximately 11:10 a.m., a man called Boone County 911 to report that he had accidentally shot himself. 6 minutes later, he called 911 again. Here's one of those phone calls.
911 emergency.
Yeah, I shot myself.
Sure. What's your name?
Michael Hill.
Michael Hill, and you shot yourself where?
I don't know. I can't move.
Okay, can you tell me a general area of where you're at?
I'm about 2.5 miles west on E57 off of 159.
Are you in Green County, sir?
I don't know.
That 911 phone call was from 29-year-old Michael Shane Hill. He went by Shane. And in that phone call, he accidentally shot himself a second time. And that's what you hear going off. Shane grew up in a small town of Boone, Iowa, and he spent most of his adult life working on a farm. Because Boone is a really rural farm area. It only has about 12,000 people now. I'm not sure what it had 10 years ago. But it's one of those towns everybody knows everybody. It's riddled with soybean and cornfields. And farming is a way of life for many people there. And Shane fit right in with that. He was a burly, rugged man who loved to farm, fish, hunt, and spend time with his friends and family. Now, here's a clip from his first 911 phone call.
911, what is your emergency?
I've been shot. Lord, I don't know where it is.
In the first phone call, he says he's been shot and he doesn't know where or how it hit him. He explains that he worked for a sheep farmer in Ogden, Iowa, and he fired his gun to scare off a coyote that had been killing the sheep. However, when he first fired his Springfield 45 handgun, it ricocheted off something and hit him in the chest, causing him to fall down to the ground and making him unable to move his legs. He further detailed his exact location to the operator, explaining that he was in the back of the farm. He was lying on some dirt and mud next to a John Deere tractor. Then the call got dropped, the first 911 call. Desperate, Shane called his best friend. His name was John Blair. He was 29 years old. When he called John, his breathing had become more and more labored, and Shane asked John to call his family so they could come to the farm and to call 911 to get help for him too. John and Shane were really close. Obviously, he's calling him after he's been shot. John and his younger brother, Danny, They grew up in Boone with Shane, basically. They had a very unstable home. So Shane's family took John and Danny under their wings. They'd include them in family events and holidays. So Shane thought of John and his brother Danny as brothers. They were like brothers to him. After speaking to Shane, John immediately hops in his truck and he drives as fast as he can to the sheep farm. But he's 20 miles away working on another farm. It's gonna take him a while to get there. During the drive, he calls Shane's mother. Her name is Patty. And in his rush, he fails to call 911 and report the accident. However, Shane is able to make another 911 call, as I said, 6 minutes after his first call. So the second call was placed at 11:17 in the morning. The dispatcher asks what the emergency is, and Shane explains to her that he was speaking to someone earlier from 911 when his phone call got dropped, and he asked if he could just speak to that person again. However, this time, that second phone call, that got rerouted to Greene County 911 because the farm Shane was on Boone and Greene County, their borders. As a result, the dispatcher that Shane had talked to earlier wasn't there, so Shane had to go and explain his situation again to the second 911 dispatcher. He said he'd taken out his handgun from the holster, he fired a shot at the coyotes, and the bullet ricocheted back at him. There were a lot of objects on the farm that a bullet could ricochet off of. There was a couple barns, farm equipment, at least three silos, and an old abandoned house. Plus, there was the farmhouse itself. Now, 41 seconds into the second 911 phone call, and I only played snippets for you, Shane somehow shot himself again. And I'm going to play that part one more time for you.
911 emergency?
Yeah, I shot myself.
Sure. So what's your name?
Michael Hill,
and you shot yourself where?
I don't know. I can't move.
Okay, can you tell me the general area of where you're at?
I'm about 2.5 miles away on 157 off of 159.
Are you in Greene County, sir?
I don't know.
You can hear Shane moaning in pain, and as the call plays out, his moans become quieter and quieter until he's no longer making any sounds at all. Shane is dying on the phone. As I said, the farm that Shane worked on was in Ogden, on the border of Boone and Greene County. It was just down the road, a few minutes away from his parents' home and his own home. Shane lived in a trailer on his parents' property. So they had this house and it had land, and then on their land was a trailer. He lived there with his wife, Jessica, and their two children, little Jessica and Cody. To give you a little background, Shane and his wife had been together for 9 years, since she was 16 and he was 20. He was introduced to her by his brother Jason while she was still in high school. Jessica's family didn't have a lot of money, and when she was in her teens, they divorced and her dad moved out of the house. She began rebelling against her mom, running away from home, and her mom found it almost impossible to discipline her. So she was placed in some foster care homes and some juvenile shelters. When she met Shane, it really turned her life around. He was always there for her with unconditional love, which she needed and embraced. She would often come over and stay with Shane at the trailer on his parents' property, where he lived with his friend Danny Blair. I mentioned Danny before. He is John's brother, and John's his best friend. When Jessica was 18, she moved into the trailer. And in 2002, she was 8 months pregnant with Shane's baby, so the two finally decided to get married. They'd been together 4 years. By their second anniversary, the couple had added a baby boy to their family, and the trailer they were living in on his parents' property was getting pretty crowded. Jessica, Shane, their two children, and Shane's friend Danny were all living there because Danny is still living there, even though his best friend is married with two kids now. For some reason, the guy didn't take a hint. Anyway, at that time, Shane worked on a different farm. But working on a farm doesn't pay a lot of money, and it couldn't give him the quality of life he wanted for his family. So he started driving semi-trucks. He was making more money than he ever had before. But the problem with driving the semi-trucks is it took him away from his family all the time. And he had two little kids. Eventually, the money just wasn't worth it. So he went back to farming, which is how he ended up on that Memorial Day, because it was Memorial Day, at the farm, laying alone on the ground, bleeding out. After Shane's mom, Patty, got the phone call from John about Shane being shot, she ran to the trailer and she told Jessica very hysterically that there was an accident on the farm. The two of them got in Patty's car and they sped over to the sheep farm to be with Shane. By the time they arrived, the paramedics were already there. It took them about 11 minutes after the first 911 phone call to find Shane. When the paramedics found him in the rear of the farm, he was lying on his back next to the John Deere tractor he had described in the 911 phone call. Next to him was his cell phone and his semi-automatic 45 caliber handgun. They found 45 caliber cartridges on the ground, confirming to them that Shane had indeed fired his own gun. Despite their best efforts, Shane died right then and there on the grounds of the farm. They later determined he died during that 911 phone call.
Oh, really?
When Patty and Jessica got to the farm, they were forbidden from coming near the scene. John Blair showed up shortly thereafter, and when he got there, the police told him it was too late to say goodbye. Shane was dead. Shane's family and friends were consumed with inconsolable grief. And Jessica, who's only 24, is now a widow left to care for two young kids. They were 5 and 3. That night, all of Shane's friends and family came to his parents' house for a gathering. The whole town was just dumbfounded by this because Shane was excellent with guns. He adamantly practiced gun safety. They just couldn't believe that there would be an accident in which he shot himself
twice.
It wasn't until the next day that Boone County Sheriff's Department learned of that second 911 phone call placed by Shane that was routed to Greene County. When they listened to that call, an officer felt like something was off. He played it over and over again, at least 10 times, and realized the second shot fired was way too quiet to have came from Shane's gun while Shane was on the phone. It would have been even louder than what you heard. That shot had to have been fired from a distance far away from Shane, which meant it was murder. In addition, the autopsy raised even more eyebrows at the police department. The bullet that Shane had said blew a hole in his arm. It wasn't all that clear in the 911, but he yelled that there was a hole in his arm. Actually hit his shoulder, too. However, the other bullet came from a .30-06 slug, which had to have been fired from a rifle held at a far distance. And I don't know what you know about bullets, but my husband showed me a picture of the bullet, and it's massive. It's a big bullet.
The .30-06?
Yeah. Furthermore, the bullet that Shane first called about, that he said ricocheted, that had actually hit his back. It hit his back below his neck, like at the top of his back, and it transversed down to his abdomen.
Ooh.
After receiving the autopsy report, the police knew, again, this was not an accidental death, but a premeditated homicide. The really sad part is Shane died, assuming he inadvertently killed himself, never learning the truth, which would soon surface. Now, investigators are left wondering, who would want this hardworking family man who'd give his shirt off his back to anyone in need, dead? One of the first persons they questioned was Shane's close friend, John Blair, the guy he called while he was dying. As I said before, John and Shane grew up together in Boone. Shane was very close to John and his younger brother Danny, as close as brothers. But as all us true crime fans know, when it comes to true crime, anyone is capable of murder. John Blair agreed to be interviewed by authorities, and they were skeptical of his story of being 20 miles away on a farm. In addition, they wondered why he didn't call 911 himself, but called Shane's mom. John claimed that in his frenzy to get to the farm, he simply forgot. After further investigation, John's alibi did check out. and he was just truly a distraught friend. Of course, they also interviewed Shane's wife, Jessica, asking her if she knew anybody who would want to hurt Shane. But she couldn't think of anyone who would hate him enough to want him dead. Now, being from a small town has its benefits, but it also has its downfalls. Everybody knows everybody's business. I grew up in a small town. I can verify that is true and accurate. One of the investigators that was talking to Jessica knew her, and he knew that Jessica had cheated on Shane 2 years earlier, causing them to be separated for a few weeks.
Ooh, the plot thickens.
So he questioned her about it, because as we know in the true crime world, affairs can often lead to murder. Jessica admitted that she did have an affair, and her and Shane's marriage had its ups and downs, and in 2005, 2 years earlier, it had a really rough patch. But their relationship, she described as being the strongest it had ever been when he died, and her family agreed with that statement. Jessica explained that in 2005, Shane was away from home a lot because they said he was a truck driver. The pay was better than when he was a farmhand, but him being away was really hard on her with a new baby and a two-year-old. They didn't have a lot of money, but it wasn't really feasible for her to get a job with a toddler and a baby. As I said, Danny, he lived in the trailer too, the third wheel, and he stepped up to the plate and he acted like a surrogate for Shane in all respects. At first, everyone's intentions were good, but after being alone with Danny for weeks at a time, Jessica and Danny started developing feelings for each other, which eventually led to the affair. And Jessica told the police during her interview, this is a quote, "Don't ever leave your best friend to take care of your wife and children because the bond grows very, very quickly," end quote. As I said, the toll of being away from Shane's family while he was truck driving was just too much for him, so he quit that job. But when he returned home to the trailer, that affair between Danny and Jessica continued on. At about 6 months into it, Shane became suspicious of Danny and Jessica. One evening, he lied to them, telling them that he was going to go to work and he'd be working through the evening and into the night. He got into his truck and he parked it down the road. And then he walked back in the dark to the house and snuck inside. When he did, he found his children were asleep, but he also found Jessica and Danny in bed together.
Ooh.
His heart was destroyed. He was crushed. He lost it. And this is his best friend he'd been living with for years. And his wife, naked. I can't even imagine.
I can't either.
He was enraged and he started throwing things around the trailer, including their TV. He managed to punch Danny before Danny hightailed it out of the trailer. The next day, Jessica left Shane and she filed a restraining order against him. I believe she was really concerned that Shane was going to hurt her because he threw the TV at her. He didn't hit her, but he almost did. But again, in his defense, he just witnessed his whole world, everything he worked so hard for, destroyed by his wife and a man he considered to be a brother. To add salt to the wound, Jessica, when she left him, took their children and moved out of town with Danny.
Get out of here!
Oh, I'd be on fire.
I know.
You'd need a restraining order because I would be on fire. She knew that if Shane were to see her and Danny together in town or anything, it would be really, really bad.
Danny's got some big balls.
Yes, he does.
Seriously.
Or he's just an idiot. However, after a few weeks away from home, Jessica really regretted leaving him. In some ways, Danny was a lot like Shane. He was an outdoorsman. Hunted, fished, but in other ways he was different. He wasn't motivated to support Jessica and the children, and he rarely had a job, hence why he's living in his friend's trailer.
I was going to say, he couldn't even support himself.
I know, right? Jessica basically begged Shane to forgive her for her horrible lack of judgment. The two talked in depth about their relationship, and she told him that for years she felt pretty much used, like she was the person that cooked and cleaned and raised the kids, and he only really showed any affection or appreciation for her when he wanted sex. She didn't feel valued. He told her, "I'll take you back," because he really wanted his family together. "On one condition, you never, ever take my kids away from me again." He said, "If you want to leave me, leave me, but don't take my kids." And she agreed. The couple wanted to get out of the area for a while, just to get away, make a fresh start. I mean, obviously Shane needed to just get away from that situation. So he got a job working for the pipeline in Kansas. It was a temporary job for like 6 months, and it paid really well. Together, the family moved there to Kansas, and they stayed in a five-wheel camper in the back of Shane's new pickup truck. Sounds like hell to me with two little kids, but by all accounts, their relationship flourished, and they managed to get back on track. As I said, the pipeline job only lasted about 6 months, and then Shane and Jessica had to return home. They moved back into the trailer. Danny, for his part, began to appreciate the gravity of what his relationship with Jessica had cost him. He begged Shane for forgiveness, and Shane talked to him on the phone a few times in an attempt to maybe try to rebuild that lifelong bond, but Shane just couldn't get over the betrayal.
I really can't blame him.
I would never be able to hang out with that person again.
I never trust them ever again.
Ever. Especially not around my wife.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, Danny kept calling Shane to work on the relationship, and Shane wouldn't even return his phone calls. Shane ended up taking the job in Ogden, working for a man who had multiple sheep farms, and now you see where we're at when the 911 calls are made. The job had its perks. Most of the farms were close to home. Shane would sometimes show up unexpectedly at home because he still was learning to trust Jessica completely, and he was still a little paranoid that Danny might end up showing up. However, through time, he learned to fully trust Jessica again, because whenever he did come back, she was there, she was doing what she's supposed to do. As Jessica explained all of this to the police, they asked her if she thought Danny could have killed Shane. And she was adamant that although Danny and Shane couldn't fix their friendship, there's no way Danny could kill Shane. After she'd gotten back with Shane, she'd asked Danny to respect her marriage, to stay away, and he had done so. The last time she said she saw Danny before Shane's death was about 4 months earlier when he was walking through downtown Boone and she was driving through it. However, when he found out that Shane had been shot, he did call Jessica. He actually asked if he could stop by the Hills family house when they had that gathering to give his condolences. Jessica asked Shane's dad and mom, Patty, what they thought about it, and they decided to let bygones be bygones, and Danny came over to the house where they had that makeshift memorial. It was the first time in years he'd been welcomed into the home of the people he considered his family. For a few hours, he grieved with everyone else, crying with Shane's brothers, Jason and Brian. The police asked Shane's family if they thought Danny, given all that they knew, was capable of murdering Shane. And they reiterated what Jessica had told them. They said, there is no way Danny could do that to him. Regardless of the affair, murder is a whole nother level of betrayal. At the time of Shane's death, Danny was 25 years old, and he lived in this small house with a new best friend. His name was Aaron Moss, and he's 26. Aaron basically filled the void of Shane when Shane and Danny had a falling out. Danny appears to me to be the kind of guy that has to have a best friend.
Really?
Somebody always with him. Kind of weird for a guy, yeah. But Aaron and Danny were always together. Police interviewed Danny and they asked him what he was doing at the time of the murder. And he said he was at home sleeping and his roommate Aaron was there and that he could verify that. So then the police spoke with Danny's roommate, Aaron, who indeed confirmed Danny's alibi. Aaron didn't even know Shane because he'd only become friends with Danny after the falling out. But this is where things get really interesting. And this is also where we're going to take a quick break.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So we're back, and just so everybody knows, Tanya's asking me who did it, but I'm not going to tell her.
fine.
She says she's never going to whisper to me who did it during
the breaks
either.
I'm not telling you ever again.
I'll just Google it. I said, I'll just Google it while she's telling me the story, and I'll find out the answer. So as I said, this is where it gets really interesting. After Shane's death, Jessica and the two kids moved out of the trailer and started living in the house with Patty and the rest of Shane's family. On May 31st, so this is 3 days after Shane's death, Officer Kalman, that was his name, he received a phone call from Patty, and she was very upset. Patty explained that Jessica had been using her laptop earlier that morning and failed to sign out of it. When Patty went to use it, she found some messages on it from Danny to Jessica. The messages were, quote, "You don't have to worry about it. He's never coming back. I miss and I love you."
Oh, damn.
Imagine Patty's horror.
Oh, I'm sure her stomach just dropped.
Yeah, because Jessica's living with her. Police called Jessica and asked if she wouldn't mind coming down to talk about a few things. And she agreed. She drove to the police station and she sat with two officers who interviewed her. During the interview, Jessica initially stated that, okay, her and Danny did talk periodically after the affair. She also stated that after she saw Danny walking in downtown Boone 4 months earlier, she called him and they hooked up once. But that was the only time during the 2 years the affair had stopped. So police questioned Danny again. And the officer that questions her, his name is Deputy Kenny Kendall. He knew Danny from the time Danny was a minor in foster care. Again, it's a small town. In fact, he was Danny's temporary foster parent for a few weeks, a decade earlier. And he would hire Danny every now and then to perform some work around the house. So he kind of used that
personal connection.
Yes, to really get to Danny. And he said, listen, you need to be honest to me about what happened. And in the interview, Danny admits to being in love with Jessica. And here's a clip.
Okay, you love Jessica, don't you?
I've always loved her.
But then he becomes even more forthright. By the time the interview was done, Danny admitted to being involved with a murder. But he stated it wasn't him that pulled the trigger. It was his roommate, Aaron Moss. All he did was toss Aaron some bullets to reload his gun. And here's a clip of that.
Couldn't shoot Shane. Because even though we had our problems, I still love him like a brother.
Okay. Who did you have shoot Shane then?
Was it Aaron? Yeah. Who? He went with him.
Aaron's the one that did everything.
No. Who wanted him dead? Was it you? Was it Aaron? Was it Jessica? Or was it a conglomeration? Did everybody have a hand in it?
I just said I didn't want to see him again.
In his confession, he said that he and Aaron went to the farm. They parked their vehicle in a spot where no one would be able to see it. Then they walked through a field with this rifle that had a scope. And they hid in the abandoned house that was on the land, waiting for Shane. When Shane fired his gun at the coyote, Aaron fired the rifle almost simultaneously, hitting Shane in the back and knocking him to the ground. In a way, it was almost the perfect murder because Shane didn't even hear Aaron's shot, only his own gun firing.
Yeah, the perfect murder until you get the bullet sizes wrong.
That's true. That's a valid point.
If they had had one that was the same as Shane's, they might have.
That's a really good point. But it's pretty genius.
Yes, it is. The idea of it is pretty smart.
As Shane laid on the ground suffering, they got closer to him, but he didn't know this, okay? And Danny handed Aaron more bullets. Aaron reloaded the gun. And that's when the second shot was fired, which blew a hole in Shane's arm and shoulder. The men then took off back through a field to their vehicle. After Danny admitted this, he was shocked when they handcuffed him. He said to them, "Why are you arresting me? I didn't pull the trigger." Apparently, he had never heard of conspiracy or felony murder. He literally believed that since he didn't pull the trigger, he couldn't be arrested.
Well, he's a dipshit.
That's true.
Now I see why he can't support himself.
It's true.
And Jessica, you dumbass.
Well, we don't know exactly what Jessica did in her involvement yet.
I know what she did.
Okay.
She knows what she did.
Our listeners don't know.
No.
So I'm going to tell you all.
Okay, fine.
First, let's get to Aaron. Aaron wasn't as forthcoming to the police as Danny was. But when he found out that Danny had confessed, blaming him for the murder, he told authorities a different story. Aaron said that he dropped Danny off at the farm that morning, having no idea Danny intended on murdering anyone. He later came back and picked him up. But other evidence eventually found implicated both men in the murder. 2 weeks earlier, they together purchased some .30-06 ammunition and a .30-06 rifle. The rifle ended up being found in a closet of Aaron's friend's house, and the ballistics from the gun matched the bullet found in Shane's body. A witness identified Aaron Moss as a man he'd seen walking across the farmyard where Shane was shot, carrying a rifle at the time of the murder. I don't know how. I mean, he couldn't have been that close, but that's what the records say. Aaron's DNA was found on the sling of the rifle, and Danny and Aaron's fingerprints were found on a box of ammunition. In addition, dumbass Danny, that's what we're going to call him now, he asked his friend Lisa, who worked as a bartender, to lie for him and say she was with him the entire Memorial Day because, quote, they made someone disappear. Lisa said she understood they to mean Aaron and Danny. He later told Lisa that he didn't like the way Shane was treating his wife, and he also said that Aaron was the trigger man. So there's no doubt Danny and Aaron conspired to murder Shane. The question authorities had, and you, is what is Jessica's part in the whole ordeal? In her last interview with the police, she admitted that she spoke to Danny all the time. She expressed to him her desires to be with him, wishing Shane would just disappear. She said that a lot to him. She told Danny she couldn't leave Shane and take the kids because Shane would go psychotic on her if the kids were taken. But she couldn't leave Shane to be with Danny because she couldn't leave her kids behind. She was just stuck and vented repeatedly to both Aaron and Danny about it. She admitted in one of her conversations with the police that she spoke to Danny and said, quote, if Shane was ever to be shot, I wouldn't want you to kill him, because if you're killing him, then that's defeating any purpose of anything, because then I'm losing a really awesome friend, end quote.
Really?
Jessica described these statements as, quote, things that you don't really mean but you say, end quote.
Over and over.
Repeatedly, right. To dumbass Danny.
Dumbass Danny.
When asked whether she had a specific conversation with Danny about shooting Shane, Jessica responded, quote, I don't think so, end quote.
You don't know.
You don't know?
If you had a conversation about murdering someone.
I don't think so.
I don't recall.
That's a pretty sus.
Sus.
You're sus. We're so trendy.
I mean, that's a pretty significant event.
So here's some more interesting facts, and this is going to probably piss you off. On the morning Shane was shot, phone records indicated that from about 25 minutes before to 6 minutes after he first called 911 to report being shot, 26 messages were sent from Jessica to Danny's phone, and 28 messages were sent from Danny to Jessica. In 31 minutes, around the time Shane died, they sent 54 messages to each other. Danny texted Jessica asking if Shane had left the trailer yet. She said he had. He asked where exactly Shane was going, and she told him what farm. He asked when he thought Shane would arrive at the farm, and she gave him the time. He asked what vehicle Shane was driving, and she told him. There were also multiple texts between Jessica and Aaron at that time, too.
These dumbasses put it in texts.
That very morning of Shane's death, Jessica had texted Danny saying she wished Shane would never come home. On June 1st, while Jessica was gathering with her friends and family at the funeral home, the police came and arrested her for first-degree murder.
Oh, shit. At the funeral home?
At the funeral home.
Wow.
Aaron and Danny had been arrested right before that. And another thing I should tell you is that when Jessica found out 2 days after Shane's death about the ballistic testing on Shane's body and the bullet not matching, she asked them to quit doing any ballistic testing.
She told the police?
Yes.
You don't need to do anymore.
She asked as a wife to please have it stop. Okay.
It doesn't work that way.
In February of 2008, Danny was found guilty and sentenced to life in prison with no possibility of parole. He testified against Aaron at Aaron's trial, implicating him in the murder. And Aaron was found guilty of second-degree murder, and he got 50 years. Aaron didn't even know Shane. That's what's crazy about it. But he was just such good friends with Danny.
You do a lot of crazy shit for your best friends, apparently.
I guess so. There's something unusual about that friendship. Jessica was tried later that year. But being that the prosecutors believed Aaron was a trigger man, and he was only found guilty of second-degree murder, they were worried about their case against Jessica. And it isn't that tight of a case. Everything I told you is all the info about her part in it. They asked Danny to testify against her, but he refused. So instead, they had that bartender, Lisa, that I told you about that Danny had confessed to. They had her go on the stand and testify to what Danny told her. The jury found Jessica guilty of second-degree murder, and she, too, was sentenced to 50 years. But here's the kicker. In August of 2011, this is 3 years after she was found guilty, the appellate court threw out her conviction, finding that Lisa's testimony was inadmissible.
Hearsay.
Yes.
Nobody objected? Apparently not.
Apparently not. I guess not. Shane's family was devastated. When the prosecutor talked to them about a retrial, they said, emotionally, we cannot go through this again. So the prosecutor asked if they'd be all right with him offering Jessica a plea deal. And they said yes. They offered Jessica a plea deal for conspiracy to commit murder, which is a Class C felony. Jessica accepted the deal, which came with a 12-year sentence. In November of 2011, as part of the deal, Jessica had to admit in court that she wanted Shane murdered and conspired with Aaron and Danny to have him killed. Once she was sentenced, she was immediately eligible for parole and released a few months later.
Are you fucking kidding me? No.
Yes. Her children are under the care and custody of Shane's family. She proclaims her innocence, and you can watch her on the show Snapped and listen to her tell her side of the story. I got some of my info from there. She comes across really likable. Like, I was listening, I was like, oh, I like her, which is upsetting to me. Because the reality of it is she knew she was manipulating Danny and Aaron and that they were going to kill Shane. I mean, there's just no way around it.
No, and I would think that she must have given some kind of hope to Danny that they could be together.
Oh, yeah.
If Shane was out of the picture, so.
She said that she talked to Danny about moving out and they were actually looking at places.
So, I mean, that right there.
But you can't move out with Shane still there.
Right.
But if you watch Snap, she's very likable.
I hate her.
Don't watch,
I'm not going to
watch
Snap.
I don't want to like her. And so that is my story. I got a lot of the information from the court records, from Snapped. There's a lot of other shows out there. I think it's like Deadly Wives, and it wasn't. I'm not gonna cut it down, but they're inaccurate. And that's about it. You can go to our website if you want to see pictures of these characters. TNTcrimes.com. And if you want to help support us, you can go to tntcrimes.com and look at our Patreon online episodes.
Yeah, we have some really great episodes. I know I've done a few on serial killers.
So you can go to patreon.com/tntcrimes to help support us. And also go to our Instagram, because I'm going to get 1 million followers in the next 30 days. No, we're not. That's Hardcore True Crime.
Hardcore True Crime.
And also Facebook, Hardcore True Crime. Anything else?
Before we go, we have some shout-outs.
These are all our newest members.
Yes, they are our newest members. There is Stacy, Autumn, Jennifer, Kathleen, Kim, Jamie, Shelley, John, Judy, Emily, Kathy, Libby, Crystal, Amanda, Janie, Virginia, Britt, Deschelle, Megan, Caitlin, Sherry, Melissa.
Holy cow!
I'm only halfway through.
Oh, man!
Sierra, Julie, Erin, Abigail, Shannon, Dan, Jen, Ashley, Taryn, Jenny, Adrian, the Sunny Unicorn, Fiona, Ginny, Justine, Laura, Jennifer, Anna, Phoebe, Melissa, Jenny, Jamie, Nicole, Angela. How would you say this name? Naima?
Girl, and don't ask me. No, I don't know.
Naima?
You say it.
Naima, I think.
Maybe. Don't ask me. I don't know.
No,
could be Naima.
I'm so sorry. N-A-I-M-A. Thank you very much. And then we also had a few people donate to our website, and that was Paula and Joshua.
Thank you, Paula and Joshua.
Thank you, everyone. And I think that's it.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, everybody.
Until next week.
Stay safe. Don't kill each other.
Bye.
Bye.